For guys, size matters. But bigger is definitely not better for guys with overdeveloped breasts. The condition is called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. Dr. Lista is a world-renowned plastic surgeon who has perfected the procedure that corrects gynecomastia with virtually no scarring. Visit theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca and size up your options for downsizing male breasts. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
Cowtown invades the big smoke. This is the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Let's head to Quebec City. Say good morning to Damian Cox. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How's Toronto treating you?
Oh, sensational. It was a matinee at the ballpark yesterday. Sun was shining, which was bad for Ezekiel Carrera, but perfect for me. And there might have even been a Goose Island beer involved. I'm not sure.
I want you to go back to Calgary when you go back and tell all the people there how nice we really are here in Ontario.
They don't like me to begin with, so they're not going to listen. But I appreciate the thought. How's Quebec City been?
It's been great. I haven't been here particularly this time of year for a number of years, and you forget what a fabulous city is, and you know, a great place for a hockey tournament like this. It's really been a terrific few days.
Parlez-vous français, Damien?
Not well enough to say it on your radio program, sir.
I wasn't sure if I was either. It's one of those places in Quebec where, unlike Montreal, which might be the only place I'm thinking of, you'd probably are going to have a tougher time in English, which is not breaking any news. But if you just had said, oh, I went to Montreal, Quebec City can't be that much different. Yeah, it's entirely different.
Well, I think it's different. And people always, I think, appreciate when you make an effort, even if you have very limited French skills like I do. But generally speaking, I find not much problem going around communicating. So, I mean, I think like everywhere, you know, Quebec City is, evolves and moves along. And most people, I find that you can communicate one way or another, and even if it has to be half English, half French sometimes.
Yeah, and you know what? The cuss words they know too, and you can use the French cuss words, and we know a few of them. Those are the ones I'm best at.
Well, you'll have to show me sometime. I would never, never know anything.
It's easy to communicate. I do this and I yell this one word. Quick takeaway from what you've seen so far. Again, over and over and over again, we're seeing the two QMJHL teams play each other. This will be the ninth time since May 5th that Rimouski and Quebec City. I don't know if you're sick of them, but they're certainly sick of each other.
Well, I can tell you the Remparts are certainly sick of the Oceanic because they can't beat them. They've lost five of the last six games. They lost the Q title to them in double overtime, and then really got manhandled last night. The distance between these two teams seems to be getting larger, not smaller. Now, that said, we get a winner-take-all match tonight in the tiebreak. The winner goes on to the semifinal tomorrow, so here's an opportunity for the Remparts to turn that around. And, you know, this is what they've been building for, this Memorial Cup tournament. They knew they were the host. They acquired players that would make them competitive for this tournament. And so here's their opportunity to show that Philippe Boucher and all the moves that he made, the acquisition of Zach Bucali and those kinds of things are paying off. But I think most worrisome you saw last night, a couple of their players, notably Anthony Duclair, leave with injuries, and whether they're ready to go tonight, that'll be a big question for the Remparts.
Staying with all things French language, have you caught much of the French Open from Roland Garros?
I always catch a lot of the French Open. And it's a quiet tournament this so far. I know there was a seeded player go out on the women's side this morning, and the absence of Milos Raonic obviously takes away from some of the attention in Canada towards the tournament, and then the poor showing by Eugénie Bouchard, robs it of that CanCon that makes it interesting. But the big ones are there. You know, Mandy Murray's playing now. Rafael Nadal won today. Novak Djokovic coming up a little later today. And as long as those big guys are playing, man, tennis is going to create a lot of excitement out there for people.
Where are you at on Eugénie? Because a lot of people, I mean, she was flung into stardom so quickly. She got all the way to the semis or the quarters in the Aussie Open when not a lot of people have heard of her. And then it was, three of the four majors. She was either in the semis or the final. And it's been a struggle for her since. Was it too much too soon? Is this very normal? or are there major issues given that she's changed coaches and hasn't really won since?
Yeah, I think you could check on all those three things. And clearly she's not handling it as well right now as she would like to, because the results aren't there. And it's not just that she's losing matches. She's losing matches to players that are ranked far below her in the WTA ranking. So, I mean, there should be concern with where she's at. She's not injured, apparently. So that means she should be able to play it where she was playing before. I think a couple of things, too much too soon, or in some ways maybe an emphasis on things that aren't as important as others. At least if you want to stay atop the rankings, you know, all the glamour elements of the WTA tour, she was very interested and excited by it. Maybe some of that stuff she jumped into a little too quickly without securing all the elements of her game. I think her game at times gets very one-dimensional. She doesn't have a plan B when she needs to against different kinds of players who do have plan Bs to play against her. And I think the coaching change, Nick Saviano, it doesn't matter who said this, you know, goodbye to who, they had something working, at least particularly for the first half of last year. And she hasn't yet found that with her new coach, at least that level of success. And maybe it'll turn around, because last year, for the first half of her year, was much better than the second half of her year. So I guess the Bouchard camp has to hope that the second half of the 2015 is going to be more successful than the first half.
Is there a quick fix? Do you see one thing that could say, okay, well, there we're going to get her right back on track? Does she have to get back with Saviano, something like that?
No, I don't think there is a quick fix. And I think she's finding the limits of her game. And now she's got to find some ways to bring more out of her game, her and her new coach. I don't think she's going to go backwards. So there is no quick fix. And, you know, the sad thing is we've seen a number of women, you know, who are at the top go way down, and it's a hard road back. Right now we're seeing with Victoria Azarenka she was in world number one, and she really fell off, and now she's trying to slowly fight her way back. The women's tour isn't particularly strong right now compared to other years, but once you fall off, it takes a while because you have to get through the early rounds of these matches, and you have to start piling up victories. And once you have a lot of points to defend, and then you lose all those points, you've got to find a way to get it all back. So she needs to start winning some matches soon.
Yeah, for sure. Back to things locally. The Toronto Maple Leafs continue to operate without a general manager, quite seamlessly. They've now gone through a trade deadline. It appears they'll probably go through an NHL entry draft without a new general manager. Do they even need one? It seems like they have three or four general managers already.
Well, they don't need one for the draft. I mean, they're sort of set up and ready to go. I mean, the question where they really need one is if they decide to start making some trades. And as much as you and I can sit around and say they should trade this guy for this guy or this guy for this guy, it's not an easy thing to do in the National Hockey League. And, the guy they had in that position, Dave Nonis, had a pretty good track record for trades. Not perfect, but no one does. So that'll be when the element comes. So I would think July 1st, they're going to need either someone in place or someone who's going to do it. And I suppose that someone could be Mark Hunter. All along, Brendan Shanahan has sort of said that's not really what he had in mind. But as of yet, he hasn't hired a new general manager. And it's a manager, I think, that for the job that's sort of not a stripped-down version of the GM job, but that's certainly a really specific job that they have in mind. So I think there's still a fair bit of time before the draft if they want to have somebody in place by the draft. But you know what? I think this is a team that's going to be looking at the draft, young players. They're not going out and making big deals, I don't think, in the very near future, unless someone knocks their socks off for Phil Kessler or Dion Phaneuf before the draft. And even then, you know, you better have some expertise on hand to know what you're getting. And then in the summer, I don't see them being a big free agent spender. Not that there's a ton of big free agents to get, but so I think they're okay for the short term, in particular with the group they've got.
It is. You make a good point. This isn't a summer where they need to make drastic changes to the roster, in the sense that you probably want to see what Kessel and Phaneuf look like under Mike Babcock. All attention should be on number four, and it's not like they're going to go blow their brains out in free agency, because I just think they're pulling, they're ripping this thing down. They're not building it up yet. So where do they go with four? We know Eichel will be off the board at two. We know McDavid will be off the board at one. And that's, I suppose, leaves them with, if you like two guys after that, you're going to get one of them. But who do they like? Who do they want to be there at four?
Well, they can get one. I think they'd love it if Dylan Strome was there. That seems to be the feeling, although Mark Hunter, having had Mitch Marner in London for so many years and was the guy who brought him there, may have a soft spot for him, or more importantly, may really believe, like a lot of people do believe, that Marner can be a star in the NHL. And then there's the big defenseman, Noah Hanifin, out of Boston Boston College. I don't see them going outside that three and drafting, you know, a Pavel Zacha out of Sardia or even Provorov out of Brandon. I guess anything is possible. The Leafs have sort of shown, I mean, even last year with William Nylander, that their thinking has changed on some of these things. People thought that they were going to go for Nick Ritchie. They were thinking something very different. So anything is possible. But I would imagine it's going to be one of Hanifin, Strome, or Marner. And I think it could be one of any one of the three, depending on how it goes. It really depends on what Arizona does at three. And it also may depend on if Arizona moves that pick. And there seems to be some chatter that that could happen.
What's your top five? Not what teams will take, but how would you rank the prospects? I know you've been doing a lot of draft coverage for Sportsnet.
Yeah, well, we'll have a new set of rankings out next week. And I thought I'd take a stretch and go with Connor McDavid at number one. I you know, just to be different than
you're
everybody.
Crazy, man.
Yeah, I mean, so McDavid and Eichel. And I still believe in Noah Hanifin at number three. I think he's the safest pick. I think he's a 6'3" puck carrying defenseman who's going to play in the league for a decade. You know, he's going to be fine. And then I would probably go Strome, Marner after that. So that would sort of be the order that I would look at. But to me, this is a draft that's going to start at number three. And what happens at number three could change a lot what happens with the top 10. And it's a draft that's going to be interesting right through the first round. And there are teams that hold multiple picks, like Edmonton and Toronto. There are teams that are looking to move their picks already. Buffalo has the number 21 pick. They're looking to move that. Pittsburgh's looking to get a first rounder after trading theirs to Edmonton. So there's a lot of fluidity right now in this draft, and I think it's only going to really sort of increase over the next few weeks.
Well, enjoy Quebec City. Not a lot of CanCon on the clay in Roland Garros, so we'll expect you to get right back to the draft beat after that, okay?
Got it. I'm on it.
Thank you, sir.
Have a fun time in Toronto.
Will do. That is Damian Cox, who is in Quebec City for the Memorial Cup, of course, and the MasterCard Memorial Cup continues tonight with a tiebreaker game. It will be the Quebec Rampart against the Rimouski Oceanic. 1-1-1 are the Rampart. 1-2 are the Oceanic. The winner will move along. Oshawa is waiting in the final, so the winner will get Kelowna tomorrow night. And that's going to be the star of your television set tonight if you're watching sports, because the Jays are on an off day. You've got two Game 7s coming in the conference final, but it's an off day in the NHL. You will see the Friday Eastern Conference final and then Saturday. Yes, the Saturday Game 7 in the conference finals between the Ducks and the Hawks, which has been a sensational series. Don't know if you've heard this. Boy, FIFA's a collection of corrupt jerks. You knew that? Yeah, I knew that too. Not terribly surprising, I suppose. But why this is interesting to me isn't that we know that FIFA's corrupt, because we've always suspected this, but because now there's ramifications, and now there seems to be an effort to go punish people, jail them, or say, okay, we won't put you in jail, but tell us everything you know. Dan Wetzel is joining us from Yahoo, talking about corrupt FIFA. This, Dan, you're telling me that FIFA's corrupt, what? That the United Nations also doesn't work, and that the IOC accepts bribes, and maybe the NCAA doesn't share money with its players? What else? This is crazy.
Eating McDonald's every day isn't good for you, apparently, also. I don't know. Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, And I really believe this is, I mean, this is a significant thing, but a lot of it is symbolic. It's just that what we all knew and what soccer fans knew and everybody suspected, someone finally stood up and said, all right, we're going to hold you accountable, because FIFA had just run without any check to its authority, almost like this its own sovereign nation for so long. That, you know, I think it was a day of kind of celebration that, you know, at least somebody said, and basically the authorities in the U.S. and Switzerland said, all right, enough, we're going to nail some of you. do I think this ends corruption in world global soccer? No, because you can't end corruption in just human nature, and that's just the way it is. But at least somebody's putting them on notice, and we'll see where it plays out.
You see Sepp Blatter keeping his job. There's a big election coming up here, and he looked very safe heading in. Is there enough time to change people's minds?
You know, if they have the election, he will win. I mean, he still has all the power and ties, and people aren't going to cross him. And you also have this situation of who knows what, and is this the time to start bailing on people? I mean, there's a lot of concern about if anybody did anything, they could end up in the crosshairs of the U.S. Justice Department also. So I think there'll still be a lot of loyalty. I think if Blatter wants to do a fifth term, and it seems to be no indication he wants to just resign, even at 79, and just put this behind him, I think he needs to run this. He needs to have that election on Friday, though. I think that would help him out a great deal, and I think he would win.
How is he not held responsible for this? It's his watch. It's his organization. He's the guy that should be making sure they're clean when the whole world knew they weren't. How is he getting away with this, or will he?
Because you're asking questions that almost nobody inside FIFA asks or cares to know about. The reason he's not held the legal matter, I have no doubt that if the U.S. had the goods on Sepp Blatter at this moment, they would have arrested him. They're trying to, obviously there's a big political and publicity score for them global. And, it's not very often that pretty much the U.S. Authorities do something that everybody around the globe is like, awesome, great job, USA, right? So they're pretty happy with this. If they could have gotten Blatter, they would have. So there's that. But I just think, what he's done, they may be able to tie him to all sorts of stuff as these guys start rolling, because this is not going to be like the Gambino crime family where guys are going to spend the rest of their life in prison out of some loyalty of silence. These are well-manicured, pampered soccer officials who are facing incredible amounts of time in prison and will pretty much do anything to cut their term to 10, 15 years in the hopes they get out before they die. These are older men also. So there's not, they're going to roll just so they have a hope of getting out before they die in prison. So, but if they don't have the goods on Blatter, what Blatter really did was just never investigate anything and oversee a system where everybody had their hands out and FIFA didn't care. Blatter made a lot of money running FIFA, as you would in a job like that. I mean, it's a big job, and if you did it honestly, you would earn a large living, and you have a great lifestyle. So he may not have been in these handouts. A lot of the stuff that gets handed out, as much as the money gets big and seems big, wasn't, that big. Like, they nailed one guy for $10 million over 19 years. That's a lot of money, but it's not even $500,000 a year. Again, a lot of money, but we're not talking about Bernie Madoff here. So I don't think anybody in FIFA cared that that Sepp Blatter was looking the other way. And so the questions you're asking and everybody's asked, for all these years, nobody in FIFA cared to ask or had the authority to really push for. Like, I don't doubt that U.S. soccer and Canada soccer and stuff like that I know they would prefer a much more honest FIFA because it helps their bid processes and things like that, but they don't have enough juice to do this. So if you were making money on this and Sepp Blatter was looking the other way, hey, you were good with it.
Can UEFA do anything? It sounds like they've thought about it, but they aren't going to postpone this election at the end of the week. They're the leagues that absolutely hate this Qatar World Cup moving to the winter. It completely screws up all their leagues. I don't know why they're not playing more difficult with FIFA.
I don't know either. And that's the inherent thing about FIFA is why does everybody give them such power? But obviously those leagues are... The Qatar World Cup is a disaster on almost every single level, and it particularly screws up their businesses, and it never should have happened, and it's almost assuredly, fixed. I mean, the United States had a bid that you couldn't dream up a more perfect bid, except if you maybe shrunk the country so it was easier to hit all the places on train. I mean, the United States has 70 stadiums with 66,000 or more people that are ready to host a World Cup game. Like tomorrow, Qatar had zero. they, went, they went with Qatar. You know, I don't know how you can come up with that bid process and say, yes, this is a much better idea. Let's stage it in 130-degree heat in a country with no stadiums and no train and no hotels and nothing over this one that's like turnkey ready and has all the corporate sponsors and all that. So, I mean, if you want to know how crazy these things are, the World Cup has not been to North America since 1994 because basically Canada and the U.S. won't play the game. And so they'll give you the Women's World Cup because they don't care, but the Men's World Cup, you know, it'll be in Europe three times, Asia twice, all the other places hasn't been. And who knows if it comes in 2026 or not. So it's like the countries over in North America, as much as CONCACAF has been nailed in this thing, are kind of stuck on this. And they can't get the bid, and they don't have enough power. But now at least I think, you know, does this change? Does the voting processes change? You know, can you get there? And to your point, will the professional league stand up and say, we're not changing our business model, and we're not going to let star players in 2022 out of their contracts to go play in the World Cup.
And I'm shocked that they've got to do that. If you're a billionaire that owns a team in the Premiership, you're going to let your stars in the middle of the season go to this tournament, possibly get injured, possibly not, in the middle of nowhere where it's going to be plus 55. It's a disaster. I cannot believe there's not more resistance.
You hear the NBA owners complain about giving their players to the Olympics. Like Mark Cuban says, it doesn't make any sense for me. I pay Dirk Nowitzki $20 million a year to play for the Dallas Mavericks, and I'm supposed to just let him go play for the German national team? That's stupid. That isn't during their season, let alone I have to cancel all these games and do all this stuff. So I'm with you on this. Look, I mean, to me, the hope is that we'll never have a decision worse than going to Qatar, and that was the zenith of, you've got to be kidding me. This is clearly just so corrupt. We've gone off the rails, because on every level, that thing is a disaster. I mean, human rights and environment. I mean, we have migrant workers dying building these stadiums. The change of the thing, everything. I mean, this was the ultimate example of FIFA's like arrogance and corruption going to the total extreme. I mean, they stomped the U.S. in that vote. It wasn't close. And, you know, to me, that's the one. And can they get it back? I don't know if they want to. If you're FIFA, if you're Sepp Blatter, and you say, hey, we got to pull out of that, well, what does the Qatari government do? Do they? I mean, somebody over there knows how this bid got done. They can turn over any evidence they want.
Do it.
The United States is going to go prosecute the leaders of another country, especially in the Middle East, when that's a country that's not waging war against everybody. So, you know, that's why they can't pull it out of Russia either. What do the Russians know? The problem when you get into any kind of corruption is you're in bed with these guys, and I don't know how they get out of it or if they even try.
I'm so impressed with how deep this runs. Like, I had my greaseball corrupt power rankings. Like, there were some big names at the top, but I think FIFA's pulled away. They're ahead of the IOC. They're past the NCAA. They are number one on my power rankings right now.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, FIFA's over the top. IOC is the only one close. The NCAA, I mean, you know, you can say, hey, these guys deserve a little extra money, but they're still getting like a college scholarship. These guys have like basically the closest thing to slave labor that we tolerate, if we even tolerate it, in this stage of human development, building them a trillion dollar playground. We have, you know, the poorest people in the world dying to build these ridiculous stadiums in a place we never should have built these ridiculous stadiums, all because, you know, this is how you get your meetings at five-star resorts in Zurich. So it's pretty ugly on FIFA. I don't think there's any question they should be number one in your World Cup of fraud rankings.
That's right. Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports. Now, maybe I'm naive. I watched Disney cartoons growing up as a child. Is it possible there could be a happy ending in this story?
I mean, I think you could get some guys put away and stuff like that, and it gets a little better. But I do feel like this is more symbolic than anything else. I mean, you get 209 countries in FIFA. There's people in the United States and Canada – certainly in the United States, but I think Canada too. You had quite a mayor. We all think our politicians and our businesses are kind of corrupt and there's underhanded deals. Like, go to a second or third world country, you know, go abroad and not central London or like Cancun, and you'll see the level of corruption is unbelievable. It's just the natural way of doing business each day. And so you're never going to change that when you have these massive countries and you have impoverished countries and unstable countries, and they have a soccer federation too, and it's just too easy for them to make extra money. You know, greed is just a basic human condition. So the idea that you're just going to like eliminate that because we got a few arrests, it's kind of like if you bust the police, round up 10 drug dealers on the corner of one neighborhood and say, that's it, we got all the drug dealers. We all know that the next night there'll be 10 new drug dealers and the neighborhood will still be the neighborhood. So this isn't going to end the systemic problem of global corruption. I do think it can make FIFA a little bit more diligent in trying to root it out and maybe change some of the leadership and get a little bit better. But the idea that bribes are going to end, you know, with the staging of a Nicaraguan soccer game, they're not concerned. I mean, that's totally naive to think. So I think we can have a little bit of a happy ending, but if you're going to go global, this is what you're going to deal with. And that's just the way it is.
Oh, it's a gloomy outlook. You've ruined it, Dan. I don't like this species anymore. These humans suck. We need to be better.
Yeah. Like, you know, the whole controversy with the Women's World Cup is like, can we get grass playing field? Like, they could install grass playing fields and all of this stuff for what some of these guys took as bribes. You know, and FIFA's like, we don't have the money for this. Okay, sure.
Right.
You don't have the money. Like, individuals have the money for this. And so now we get to watch and go, boy, I hope no one blows a knee out on the bad turf or on turf.
Yeah.
And that's where you just sit there with FIFA and go, you guys are, I mean, this is like, I'll put it this way. I don't really care that much if some third world soccer official makes a couple extra bucks and a bribe, it doesn't really affect my life. Right. But when you're watching and going, God, you're potentially hurting the athletes, or there's people dying building these stadiums, or, you know, it's just such arrogance that you wouldn't even consider the complaints of the athletes. That's the stuff where you go, God, you know, even my probably limited moral compass is kind of outraged, and it takes a lot to get me. So,
well, they need two jacuzzis and the best foie gras in Sepp Blatter's Learjet, so we can't get turf in for the Women's World Cup. Sorry about that.
I'll say this. The man's lived quite a life.
His wife's half his age.
He's doing all right.
Oh, this jerk.
He's like, joke's on you. Call me all the names you want.
He's getting reelected. Yeah, it's exactly it.
Yeah, I'm going back to my castle in Zurich.
Yeah, well, I'll go back to a couch and, you know, see what I can find change under the pillows and grab some lunch later today. Thanks, Dan, on your gloomy outlook on the human race.
Yeah, see you.
All right, that's Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports. It does suck, and he's right, though. It's human nature, especially when you go to countries that are not as organized as ours. Very fun picking at our government and our administrations and all these federal bodies or bureaucracies we have in place, but just a little glance at some less organized countries, you know, we're not that bad off here in Canada. We'll come back with from one set of Canadians to the others. Should Brendan Gallagher be the next captain of the Montreal Canadiens? Renaud Lavoie comes in. He will know more than we do. And apparently the Habs legends are weighing in on this. That and a preview of the Eastern Conference Final. We got a Game 7 tomorrow. I can't wait for it. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Does not get any better than this. We've got summer-like weather around most of the country, I should say. North America, to be sure. We're into the warm weather. We're into the conference finals. We've got two Game 7s. Something we've done in a former life is finally paying off. There's some sort of karma in the universe paying us back. For more on the first of two game sevens coming up tomorrow night, we welcome and say hello to Renaud Lavoie of TVA. How are you, sir?
I'm good, and you?
Well, I'm not in New York and Tampa on and off the last 2 weeks, so I'm not as good as you.
No, and it, the weather in Tampa was just marvelous. So and now I'm in New York. It's there's a couple of clouds in the sky, but everything seems to be good so far, so good.
It's a very quiet place, a little hamlet, yeah. New York. Yeah, yeah. Just it's yeah. on the ocean there, I think, right? Nothing to do there, yeah. Right?
Yeah, well, we're going at the Rangers practice facility, so that's a stretch. That's a stretch before going downtown.
All right, so exactly where are you now? Are you watching Lightning practice, or are they practicing at different places? Because it sounds like it's full participants for Tampa.
Tampa is in Tampa today for practice. They're going to fly later in the afternoon, and the Rangers are practicing at noon. So it's two different places today for this Thursday, but Friday they'll be back at the MSG.
I mentioned it yesterday. I think this series has been the textbook case of the inability of momentum to carry from one game to another. I'm a believer that it's tough for momentum to go from one game to the next because it's looked like the Rangers are going to win low scoring games after game one. Tampa scored 12 goals in games two and three combined. It looked they were going to run away with the series. Then the Rangers win game four. I mean, I can't figure it out.
And it's really tough to figure it out. And that's why nobody really believes in that. In one important stats, the Rangers never lost a game seven at the MSG. They're 7-0. But at the same time, like you just said, for the Tampa Bay Lightning, it doesn't matter at all. The bottom line for me, and it's going to be really easy, the question will be who's going to have the best goaltender for game seven. Is it going to be Ben Bishop as he was, as he was to start the series in the last, obviously last game was really bad for him? Or it's going to be Henrik Lundqvist, who's been steady, to be honest. I understand that he allowed at one point tons of goals, but he was still steady. I think he showed again why he's one of the best goaltender in this league. It's not easy to play versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're fast, they're quick, but Lundqvist was really solid. Maybe if I had to pick one between Bishop and Lundqvist, I'm more surprised about what Lundqvist did in this playoff series than Bishop.
Well, if you're going on resume, you've got to take Lundqvist, and yet there's Bishop shutting out Detroit in the must-win Game 7 in Round 1. He was sensational in a 4-1 victory over Montreal to wrap up that series, and he shut out the Rangers in MSG his last trip there last Sunday.
Yeah. And that's why, for the Lightning, they're going to arrive in New York later this afternoon with a lot of confidence that they know that they're able to go get that big win. But the only difference is when they play game seven versus Detroit, it was at home. When they beat the Canes in game six, it was at home.
Yeah.
So now they have to win that big game on the road. NSG is a special place. Everybody knows it. A couple of players from the Lightning told me after game one that they were impressed by the MSG. That's why they didn't show up really for game one. It changed after. They have a couple of wins there, so they know how to win at the MSG. But they better have a good start, because if they don't, and if it's the Rangers that are pushing early, I feel it's going to be tough.
Well, you could start watching. It's what everyone does their first trip to MSG, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Who have you seen?
There's a lot of that. Larry David was there last game. I was. It's a big person, and it's a big personality in North America with everything he did in his career, and it was amazing to see that man so close.
I can just see Tyler Johnson on the bench talking to Kucherov, trying to explain who Larry David is. No, Seinfeld, his buddy, the screw-up George, that's him right there. They scored again. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. Maybe he what was the show again on HBO, Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Sure, yeah.
Maybe he saw that those series. That was great, too. It was great stuff.
The Lightning are the youngest team in the NHL. That was a stat that I don't know if it surprised me. I knew they would be younger because you look at their core pieces and they're all in their first 2, 3, 4 years in the league. And if Stamkos is a gray beard and he's not even close to 30 yet and hasn't felt free agency yet, you know they're going to be young. But does that surprise you? They're the youngest team. There's not one team out there, Edmonton, Buffalo. There's not a younger team in the NHL.
It is surprising, but they know how to win. That's the thing. They won the Calder Cup 2 years ago with the coach that they have today, John Cooper. And for me, that's why they're so good. They obviously have tons of skill. The third and fourth line is not scoring as much as they wanted. Actually, they're not scoring at all. But for them, it's not really a problem as we speak. It could be a problem in the Stanley Cup final, but the best players need to be the best players, I think, for Game 7 for the Lightning. There's a big difference between the Lightning, a 26-year-old average, and the Rangers are at 28. And I was talking about that with Julien Brisebois. I said, and 2 years is a big, big, big gap for between two teams. And in the NHL, it's a big gap. So the thing, too, is you look at the Lightning. This is and I think it's more important, this is a taller and bigger team than the Rangers, and it shows. Just start with Ben Bishop, tallest goaltender in the world, actually. You can go after that, look at Hedman, Brian Boyle. I mean, those guys are huge. They're taking a lot of space.
Schuster's a mountain. He's huge.
Schuster, yeah, exactly. You're totally right. Everybody forgets about Schuster. What a great defenseman. For a guy who decided to play in Tampa because he had offers, I think, to play for the Rangers too at one point. It's impressive to see what a guy like him is able to do. Obviously, the last game is a write-off. I think it's a write-off for the Lightning. Everybody forgot about that game. More important, you know what? And they're not going to use it, but they had an excuse. Before game 6, there was 7 players on IV in the morning. 7 players is a lot of players that were sick. And I didn't felt any energy from the Lightning to start the game. You're gonna say, Renault, they outshoot obviously the Rangers a lot. It's totally right, but it's question of having quality of chances. I think the Rangers had an edge right there, and defensively, the Lightning were struggling a lot.
What's John Cooper like? You mentioned him a little bit ago. The head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning was a lawyer. But apparently he likes locker rooms more than courtrooms. He's been really good, but coached like 10 teams in the last 12 years. Every I won this league. I got to move up. Oh, I won that league. Oh, USHL, college hockey, AHL.
Yeah.
He's got rings from all these leagues we've never heard of.
I know. It's a special person. It's somebody you've never met, I'm pretty sure, in the NHL. You know, it's a little bit like Guy Boucher. Guy Boucher is a special coach to a special person the way he talks. But Guy wasn't a lawyer in his life before turning head coach. He was involved in hockey from the start. And that's why John Cooper is a special person, and he's doing really, I think, special things with that team. The way he talks to the media, one of the best in the league. I'm convinced that when he's speaking and talking to his players, they listen because he's smart. When you have somebody in front of you who is really smart, you're going to listen no matter what. Even if it's not, you think it's not, maybe sometimes you're not happy with some coach's decision, but the way he explained it, I'm convinced that it's easier for the players to understand exactly what he wants. So, yes, I'm impressed by John Cooper. He's a special person, and he's going to coach in the NHL for a long time, I'm telling you. And this is not a question of going to the Stanley Cup final or not this year. It's more a question of who he is, what he bring on the table. And don't forget that Rick Bowness is there with him. Rick has been around the league. I think he did it all. Maybe he didn't coach the goaltenders. And that's about it. And he's Rick is really, really helping John Cooper, because at the end of the day, you need to have somebody who knows the game as much as Rick Bowness beside you.
We're chatting with Renaud Lavoie of TVA. We've got 30 seconds, and I should have left more time for it, but, well, we're here, and the more I explain why I didn't, the less time we have. Guy Lafleur says Brendan Gallagher should be the next captain of the Habs. Do you agree?
If I talk to all the players in the dressing room, all the Habs players are going with Max Pacioretty. So if there was a vote today, it would have been Max Pacioretty for sure. I love Brendan Gallagher. I think he's playing like a captain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's putting everything on the table night after night. This is a super player. And I can't believe he was picking a fifth round for the only reason that he's too small, yeah. quote unquote, too small. If you know what, to put Brendan Gallagher there, it's not a bad pick from Guy Lafleur. I think he's not wrong at all, but knowing from what's going on in the inside in this locker room, Max Pacioretty has the edge. Now the question that you need to ask yourself is, who's going to decide? Is it going to be the players or management? As of now, it's going to be the management. And that's if they want to have a captain for next season because they really like what happened this year.
Renaud, thanks for your time. Enjoy New York and Game 7 tomorrow.
All right. Have a nice one. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you. That is Renaud Lavoie of TVA. And yes, this is definitely this a year for, too small to play in the league. Well, Tyler Johnson disagrees. Brendan Gallagher disagrees. Game's changing, my friends. Hey, don't go anywhere. John Gibbons, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays at 11:15 on an off day. Where are they at heading into Minnesota? A reminder, you've got the elimination tiebreak game coming up tonight between the two QMJHL finalists and that Game 7 we speak of, Tampa and New York, tomorrow is on CBC at 8 o'clock. I'll be back tomorrow to talk more with you. The Baseball Central coming up next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.